One, two, three, four. Just another day at my dead-end profession. I'm living day to day. Yeah, listening to some good old country records on the radio. And yeah, what else can I say?
Thank you for tuning into the show. Just me and Bobby today. Dave is either working or on a vision quest. I forget which.
It's okay, Ryan. I'm going to fill his role in by A, pretending I know things that happened in the 1970s when Dave grew up, and B, sniping at little comments on the side in order debase both of us. So I'll be doing that for the rest of the episode.
Do it with a high vocabulary, yeah. And we're in business.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be my perky self today. I apologize. Shot a commercial yesterday for 13 hours.
That sounds about right. I mean, because, you know, commercials are about 30 seconds long. So yeah. 30 seconds, 13 hours, yeah. About the right.
Yeah, and the hours, by the way, were from 3 p.m. Uh-huh. afternoon to 4 a.m. So, and it was not an easy 13 because it was the whole point of this commercial. It's supposed to be like a mini action movie,
okay.
You know, so the plot of it is like, I steal the design for their product. And so that 13 hours was spent sprinting, climbing. There was a scene on a rooftop. I told the casting director I wasn't afraid of heights. And here's the thing, I lied. I'm very afraid of heights. And also on this roof that the final scene was filmed on, the person up there that works for the company that he's an engineer. And so since he's an engineer, like, you know, I was afraid. This roof felt very wobbly and mm-hmm. I'd step and I'd feel like a little bounce to the top of it. I'm like, that's not good. And I looked at the engineer who works in this building and is also an engineer.
Right.
I said, hey man, this roof is safe, right? He's like, oh no. No. And I'm like, and the thing is, I know he's not joking because this guy seemed like a lot of people that are brilliant in mathematics.
Yeah.
He seemed that he did not grasp sense of humor very well. It's not like, hey, I told the actor it wouldn't save. I just feel like he's like one of those guys that has no type of like filter. He just like, no, this is not safe.
No, he was spectrumy and he decided to tell you the truth. But did part of you go, let's see, let me just do the math here. If I fall through this roof and break a leg, this company is going to be on the hook for quite a bit of cash.
I don't think I'd live to see it. I hope Erin has fun spending it, and she'll probably bring a date to the funeral.
There you go.
So anyways, I do have to say, though, that filming such a strenuous thing, I have such a higher respect for actors that are caught losing their fucking minds on set at someone.
Right.
Because, I mean, we all remember that Christian Bale footage. Like, I'm gonna kick your fucking ass, man. You're fucking finished. Like, all right, that guy films an action movie. That is not just 13 hours one day.
Right.
That guy's got the schedule I had today for months on end. And let me tell you, I like to pride myself as A, being a very well-behaved comedian off the stage, mm-hmm. and two, someone that gets a reputation of being easy to work with.
You're not that well-behaved or easy to work with if you're out there stealing people's secrets. So.
Yeah, right. So I can tell you, when you go climbing up a two-story utility ladder, carrying a heavy piece of equipment on a shoulder bag, which is constantly catching on the safety cage, and make it to the top, and you're sweating, and you have to bust open a latch to a roof, jump out, shoulder roll, turn around, and your co-star goes, I'm sorry, line. You will get close to me. I'm going to kick your fucking ass, man. Do the fucking line right. So I understand.
I was your co-star, Dave. I feel like he was just fucking with you.
That was strenuous. And it was fun for 6 hours. And then there was 7 more hours.
At some point, when you're doing the ladder climb and the bus to the top and hauling the bag around,
yeah.
Is there a key grip or something that's like, you know what, guys, I've been on my feet for like 4 hours. I really need to take a break. And you look over at him like, oh, you need the break.
No, you know, everyone is, I have to say that everyone was very professional and everyone was understanding that we're all in a very miserable, high stress situation here. We would all like to get out of here on time. But then things will happen. Like, for instance, there was a cameo in this commercial. It's for a company that builds racing equipment.
Mm-hmm.
There's evidently a former Playboy bunny that's now a racer, off-road racer.
Really?
And, of course, she's a big star. Her whole thing is that she, like, everything pink, her jumpsuit, mm-hmm. her car.
Sure.
And so she had a cameo with no lines because you could probably guess why.
Yeah.
Of the 13 hour day, she only had to be there for 10 minutes. She was like an hour late. And so there was an hour of us just sitting there waiting for her. So literally I could run past her and the whole thing is like, hey, look at the celebrity that's in this commercial. Anyway, keep going. So there's things like that where you're like, Serenity now.
I gotta say, though, that's a good move for her. Because if you think about it, what do people do after their Playboy Playmates? Literally, most of them do nothing, right? But the ones that do try and do it, they're like, I'm gonna come out with a line of designer handbags. And it's like, that's the wrong market.
No one gives it. Yeah. 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 Nobody that was reading your spread in Playboy magazine also wants handbags.
Exactly. But the guys who watch motocross or whatever, they definitely do know you. And those are the guys that is your audience. You don't have to be good. I mean, I have no idea about this person. I don't even know about the sport. So
Me neither. I
couldn't talk about this person. But she could be dead last, and people would still love her because she's the pink Playboy Playmate.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a good move. It's a great move. And she was very nice. But it was weird being in an environment, speaking of like that we don't know anything about the sport, where I wasn't trying to do this to hurt anyone's ego, but there was like two professional racers there that did cameos that are evidently huge celebrities in that world, which is a very niche world, you know? And I could tell, I won't say they were upset by it, but it did seem a little weird to them where I'm like, hi, and you are? You know, it'd be as if Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson came to one of our parties and our friends were like, so what do you do? And he just like,
So, how's it going, little guy?
Yeah. Are you trying to be in the fight game, are you? Oh, look at those muscles.
It is a funny thing, the whole world of commercials. It's also weird because when you do, I do video editing sometimes, and when you do editing, you realize how much you have to shoot to get a small finished product. A lot of time, most people don't realize that. You know, both shooting and editing-wise, it is a substantial time investment to get a very small product out. So you did a commercial that'll probably be 30 seconds and they'll have a minute version and maybe even a 90-second version. But you had to film for 13 hours. I guarantee you there's somebody in an editing bay for 25 hours on top of that.
Yeah, and she was the director of the commercial.
And that doesn't include the writing, the planning, the scouting the location, doing shot by shot, figuring out how you're going to do it, getting a director. It doesn't include all that. So in the end, what you have is a final product that's 30 seconds of something that somebody might look up from the couch and go, oh, yeah, look at that race car star. And then look back down. That took a cumulative, if you count everybody on set, all the time and everything, like, I don't know, cumulative 3 months worth of work.
Yeah, yeah. So there was that the night before I had a show. So I missed, you know, the weekend was all work for me. The show, by the way, on Friday night, thank you to those who came out. Let me tell you something. Is that I know that on this show where it's comedians talking about their week, that we often bring up all the stuff we are jaded and over in comedy. But one thing that I'll never be jaded to and will always mean a great deal is when someone comes up to me at a show, we've talked about this before, and said, hey, I came out just to see you. That happened on Friday. A guy that is actually on the Tijuana soccer team brought his buddies up. I used to work with him a number of years ago. He's a listener of the show. He's like, yeah, you know, I listen to you when I exercise. And I'm trying not to show it in that moment, but I'm it's like every time that happens, it's like the first time a woman said I love you to me.
Right.
I'm trying not to cry. I'm trying to hold it together. But really, in my heart, I'm like, thank you. You know, it's something that I think everyone in entertainment thought would never happen even once. Uh-huh. So it means a lot. So thank you to those of you that come out and take the time to say that you came out for me. It means more than anything.
And Ryan Shores, now backed up by the Tijuana soccer team.
Fuck yeah, man.
I feel like that's the beginning of a joke, too, by the way. It's like, he's got more problems than a Tijuana soccer team.
You're terrible. Bobby. Pride just happened here.
Oh yeah, it was a good time. Did you go out to Pride?
No, I was taping.
Yeah, but they start at like 10.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. Here's the thing. I have a very unpopular opinion.
Ooh.
Might get some letters on this one.
Okay.
I think that if I were gay, I would have just a little bit of annoyance, just a little, with some of the straight people that are starting to turn Pride into their new Comic-Con. I don't know. I understand that does not apply to straight allies across the board. But I was on Facebook in downtime yesterday, seeing people's posts about Pride. Most of them were cool, but I've noticed that there are some people. Look, here's what I mean. 10 years ago, going to Pride really meant something. It was really necessary because Prop 8 was going around and passed. Sure. And there were those horrible commercials with like the little girl coming home like, "Mommy, a teacher says I can marry a princess." And the old white bitch going, "Oh, no. You really want this to ruin families, you know?" So going to Pride was, you know, the straight person's way of saying like, "Hey, we love you. You're not a freak. You are doing nothing wrong. Please don't pay attention to those horrible commercials paid for by Mitt Romney or something. Yeah. Like you have our support." But I've noticed in recent years, there's quite a bit of like, it has become like, hey all, look at my outrageous outfit. Hmm? And like a lot of
I believe Dave actually wore some S&M bondage gear to Pride this year.
He did. I'm not trying to exclude any friends here. And you know, like there's a lot of like, "Hey all, like where's the pre-party? Where are we getting cocktails for Pride? Hey, how about a Pride after party?" I'm like, what is this to you? Is this you legitimately being supportive to a community? Or is this you making the scene?
One, it's a fun party.
It is.
The gays know how to throw a party.
Oh, fuck yeah, they do.
So regardless of how you feel, part of it is the party. But I get what you're saying, because as a nerd, I do feel that way about Comic-Con. Comic-Con used to be a super nerdy thing about comics and Marvel and DC and all this kind of stuff. And then it just became everything pop culture. It became, oh, what movie is coming out?
Oh, Jonah Hill's announcing his new romantic comedy. Like, why is that a Comic-Con?
Yes, exactly. So I get what you mean about that. It would be interesting to see, you know, what the idea is in the gay community. Because it's a huge party that isn't just restricted to gay people. I went there with my wife and son yesterday.
I love going. I was sorry I missed it.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was just a thought I had. And by the way, before you write me a message defending why who I just described isn't you, don't, because if I'm not describing you, then there's no reason to defend yourself. I understand that a great majority of the straight allies that went to Pride aren't what I'm describing. But by the way, if you're not what I'm describing, you know you saw a few of the people I'm describing. You know you did.
Yeah.
I'm sure you fucking saw the people I'm describing.
Plus.
Same team.
Yeah, plus I go to Pride for completely different reasons. Yeah, sure, you want to support your gay friends and all. But really, it's just because there's a whole bunch of usually heavy-set women who go essentially topless because that is acceptable at that point. Yeah, and so, that's definitely my demographic. I have a blast at Pride.
I know you do.
My wife, it's funny you say, like, the difference between 10 years ago and now. Even then, 10 years ago, it was still a party. I went to Pride 10 years ago. It was still fun and everything like that. It just wasn't as big. But my wife made the mistake of going to Pride Fest in Eastern Europe about 8 or 9 years ago.
Now that!
Yes, that is courage, because what it is quite literally about 40 incredibly brave people walking in the middle of the street as people throw bottles at them. And I'm not exaggerating in the slightest.
I don't think you are.
And it ends up becoming a riot. And it is like, oh, you have to be pretty goddamn ballsy to do Pride in Budapest as opposed to here, you know?
Right. And going back to my point, there's a difference between the people that show up to Pride to say, good for you, and then there's a small few that show up to say, good for me.
Yeah.
Good for me for supporting this group. I am such a good person. Some would say hero.
And then there's at least one that's good for boobs.
Yeah, that's you.
Yep.
Right. Bobby, very scary thing happened to me recently.
Huh. Did you fall off a roof during filming a commercial?
No, I would not be here sitting with you. I want to get your opinion on how I handled it and maybe what you would have done in a very helpless situation.
Interesting.
Went to Mexico with my wife a week or two ago.
Okay.
For her birthday. We went to Puerto Nuevo.
Okay. So it's down by Ensenada, famous for their lobsters.
Yep. And we have some spots we like to stay. We get a room on the beach, you know, and we just gorge ourselves on lobster and tequila. It's great. Mm-hmm. So there's a little tourist spot in Puerto Nuevo that we always go to. We have a spot for where we get lobster, and we have a spot where a little shop where we get like a souvenir and like some bootleg tequila that they keep in the back there. You know,
it's
in Mexico, they do tequila like they do moonshine in the South. You know, someone's abuela makes it and then they sell it. You know, it's like a hush hush thing, but you can get it. It's great. We've been there a few times and never had a problem. I haven't had a scary moment in Mexico since I was 18. Mm. You know, it's not what people think it is down there a lot of the time if you mind your P's and Q's.
Yeah, it's pretty touristy near the borders.
Yeah, so we're walking down this little strip of tourist area, and up ahead we see 9 or 10 Mongols, the full
patch.
Oh,
the biker gang.
Yes, okay. Club.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not supposed to say biker gang for the guys who are clearly a gang.
Yeah.
I once got corrected by a biker gang member we had on the show who said, tell me about the biker gang. He very, very sternly said, biker club.
Yeah.
And I said, you know who wouldn't say something like that? Somebody who wasn't in a gang.
So, in either case, very scary outfit, all
sure,
right?
Because they're already lawless, and now they're in a land of lawlessness.
Yes, they are. The biker gangs like the Hells Angels, the Vargos, and the Mongols go down to Tijuana because there will be no repercussions for anything they do.
Right, like it's like when you see shark researchers, and you obviously know this as a shark fan, but every once in a while they go into the water, and they get a shark on like a lift and pull him out of the water, and then the researchers will tag them or take their measurements or do whatever, and as they're doing it, they're very close to the shark, and you think to yourself, man, that's scary, being so close to a dangerous animal. And it is, but you know what's scarier is being close to that animal when they're in the water. And that is, Mexico is the water for bikers.
And they are day drinking. They are to cause trouble. They're not just like what you when you see a MC here in San Diego that's just there to have a few beers and some fun. They are down. They are out.
Yeah.
So anyway, and again, full patch. These guys have killed someone.
Probably.
So me and Aaron, thoughtlessly, she wore a very boobs out dress. And she wasn't thinking. She wasn't trying to show off. But she's on vacation. It's her birthday. We're going to a little tropical hotel.
Right.
And she didn't think.
So you see them. Are they a block ahead of you?
No. By the time we see them, they're a few steps ahead.
Oh, no.
And you can't just, you cannot just stop, turn around, and go the other direction, because they will see that as fear.
Yeah.
And they will play with it. Now, and that comes into play in just a second. So I do my move. I just take Aaron's hand, pull her in close. She sees what's going on, too. She's no stranger to biker lifestyle. She knows what's going on. She was raised in a Hell's Angels environment.
Right.
And so she's extra afraid of Mongols, because Mongols are the Hells Angels' sworn enemy. Her mom raised her in a Hells Angels bar, so this is extra scary for her.
Right.
These are the people that have tormented the people that were supposed to protect her as a kid. So anyways, we just kind of walk through their little gathering.
Oh my God, are you like literally walking in the middle of these people?
Yep, because they've overtaken the sidewalk.
Jesus.
And I'm just not making eye contact. I'm making sure not to bump into anybody for sure. And we get past their little group, and two of them see us and decide to flank us and start walking on either side of us. And Bobby, this guy is like staring, and the other guy is staring at Aaron on the other side of us, and they're keeping pace with us. So I stop, they stop.
Oh no.
I start walking again, they start walking again. So now I am in a situation.
But the rest of their group has moved on.
Yeah, but two of them saw Aaron, liked what they saw, and that was that is where we're at. And we're
in God,
fucking
this is terrifying.
Mexico.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I am, you know, as a prideful person, it's a very unique and rare situation where I feel completely helpless.
Yes.
And I know for certain there is nothing I can do if they decide to do something.
100%.
So this is where I tell people, self-defense isn't always a combat situation. Sometimes self-defense is how you carry yourself.
Right.
And so I am in my head, which is going 20 fucking thousand miles a minute right now, as I'm worried about my wife being raped. I'm worried about me getting fucking stabbed.
Right.
And by the way, this is not about money. This is about Aaron.
Yeah.
And so it's the worst fucking nightmare you can picture yourself in. So anyway, I know there's two wrong moves. Number one wrong move is to show fear, like I just mentioned.
Sure.
Because if I like start cowering, like they are going to start, because they're bullies.
Yeah.
They're going to start doing what a mouse does when they find like an injured beetle on the ground and just start patting at it. Yeah. Like, oh, fucking great, this is easy. Now, the other wrong move I can do is to show no fear.
Yeah.
And you know, puff up, because then they will see that as a challenge. that'll cause something bad to happen even faster.
Right.
So there is a third option, which is blissful unawareness. I am showing ignorance to the subject, to the situation. I'm like, I've got a big dumb grin on my face. I'm looking around at the buildings like, yeah, look at that over there. And you know, the guy is clearly trying to intimidate me. I'm doing like, oh, hey, what's up, man? And you know, like, and they're kind of now looking at you, they're confused, like, wait, they should be either, this guy should either be scared or trying to, yeah, to idiotically stand up for himself. But instead, I'm like, do you guys know where the lobster place is? And so finally, after a minute, they kind of get bored,
right,
and they just break off and leave.
Oh, and my so, God, that must be the most relieving feeling on earth.
Well, it's not over yet because we then disappear into this restaurant, right? And I see them take tabs on where they are, even right, going as far as a point that that's where they went into. Uh-huh. The back of this restaurant, Bobby, is a 78-foot cliff to the ocean. Uh-huh. There's no back way out of here. And by the way, you can't just tell the waiter, like, help. But, you know, they're like, oh, you're bringing trouble in here. Get out.
Let me guess. You got Aaron on your shoulders, found a giant trench coat, and left incognito as a 13-foot tall man.
Well, we ordered lunch, but the entire lunch is us fucking stressing out. Like, what are we going to do? How right, are we going to get out of there? They clearly made a mark of where we are. When we go out of here, I'm like, all right, so only two of them seem to be interested. I don't think they're going to need to call for any backup for what they saw in us.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, what's going to happen is if we go out, this is the plan we formulated. I'm like, if we go out of here and they begin to follow us again, we're going to go as far to the car as possible. Mm-hmm. If they do any type of thing where they both step in front of us and clearly aren't letting us pass,
yep,
that move, I'm like, what I'm going to do is I'm going to grab both of them around the neck in like a double tie clench, and I'm just going to hold onto them for dear life.
Okay.
And I need you to run as fast as you can, freaking the fuck out. You yelling, stop, don't hurt them, is not going to help me at all.
Right.
By the way, Aaron, I got about 10 seconds.
Yeah.
I'm going to grab them around the neck in the tightest tie clench I have. I have 10 seconds before they, A, fuck me up, yep, and B, call for their boys across the street. You have 10 seconds to find a pharmacy or a crowded restaurant where you need to freak the fuck out as loud as you can, and that is the only shot we have.
Yep.
And so we get out of that restaurant. I have her by the wrist so fucking tight, I probably left a bruise on her, and I am yanking her through the fucking street. She's keeping pace.
It'd be funny if the Mongols are looking and they're like, oh, look at that man. He's abusing that woman. We should go help.
You're right. I don't think that'd be the case. And so literally we make it to the car and get in and leave a dust cloud out of that fucking tourist area.
Did you watch that? Were they coming towards you at all?
They did not see when we exited. They were back to day drinking. If one and a couple of them did look over, but not the two that had flanked us. So and they didn't know, hey, some of our boys would like to have take turns on that lady over there. We should probably help. Wow. So we were able to get out, but that was a very terrifying experience. Bobby, what do you think of how I handled it? Yeah. What would you have done differently?
The blissful ignorance is great. That's a tactic that is used actually by corporate professionals, not just for physical altercations, but also to deal with difficult people in like a corporate situation. Because mm-hmm, you can say, Janet, get on your shit. Stop coming to me for every problem. Or you could be blissfully ignorant. And when they come to you for problems, like, yeah, I don't know, maybe you should ask somebody else. And it turns out that that's a really good way to handle it because it doesn't demean them, but also it doesn't train them to keep coming to you for problems. So in that sense, beautiful tactic. The other thing you did, which we actually, my wife and I have codified, is something called a family plan.
Yes.
So this was one of the conditions for which I put on our marriage, is that my wife had to abide by our family plan.
Yeah.
And our family plan is, if we are ever in a situation where anything is, where anything like that happens, I yell the term family plan. She has to grab my son and get the hell out of there. She grabs him, she runs. Her job is to get to safety, whether that's inside of a car or someplace else, and then she can call 911. And I will slow down anything else from happening. It's very similar to what you did, like your hug maneuver. Because yeah, I feel like in the situation in Mexico, I've been in shady situations like that. There's a very big difference between I'm there with my wife and I'm there in danger. Because I always feel I'm there in danger, I can take three swings and run, right? Yeah. That is not an option when you are there and you have somebody to protect.
Yeah.
And so we have this as a codified plan, which is I will stop this however needs to be, even if it's, you know, you're the one taking a stomping, but you take the kid and get the hell out of there. So I think that, A, Great plan on that side. I'm glad you didn't have to use it.
Yeah, me too. Me too. You would just not hear from me again.
Yeah, yeah.
I would not find that body.
I wouldn't have used the tie clinch, though I understand why you would. That's not a bad move. I always go for an eye gouge as a first move in that kind of scenario where you have to go against two people because it's the only way to incapacitate somebody that quickly for a time where you could fight two people at once. Either an eye gouge or a groin hit would probably be my main goal. But I do like the tie clinch. Just in terms of giving her time to get out of
there. Yeah, that's my only concern at that point.
Very, very good. I think you guys should have tried some more shenanigans, though. Some, like, funny tricks. Like, maybe you guys should have dressed up in other outfits, tried to sneak out.
Why does everything have to become a Little Rascal sketch with you?
It's funnier that way.
I'm sure it is.
I would have liked to see you guys pull that move from every 1980s movie where you go up to the line of bikes and kick the first one over so they all fall like dominoes and the guys can't chase you. That's always a good favorite. One of the other ones, too, I like is if you can get somebody on your side. So if this had been a 1980s wacky action adventure, you would have befriended some kind of federale that later, as the bikers are coming through, he would have recognized them, you would have tipped him off, and they would have had something horrible happen to them as they're coming through a federale checkpoint.
I think that I befriend a drag queen.
Okay.
This is how my story would go. I befriend a Mexican drag queen who is crying on the side of the road, and we comfort her because her father does not understand her life choices. And we give her a nice pep talk. And later on, we are rescued by a federale who gives me a wink to reveal she is said drag queen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there is something about
That's basically what happened to my fellow Americans, though. But don't worry about that.
The great thing about Mexico is it really is a vigilante justice land. Like, it really, really is.
If you have a gun.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily. So
I don't want to hear it, Bobby. I don't know what scenario you're about to throw at me, but no.
I think I've told this story before. We once got fucked out of a thing when we were like 18, and our friend's mom was taking us down as our high school graduation present to Rosarito, and we got down there and she had made a reservation for this hotel and we were all excited, and we get there and they went we gave away that reservation. She's like, but I had made a reservation. And they're like,
it's Mexico.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And she was like, yeah, I know, but you know, somebody offered more money. And she's like, but that's not what a reservation is,
right?
And so there was this huge hubbub, and they're basically like, yeah, what are you gonna do about it, see ya. And so we went out someplace else and got a hotel, but we were very pissed because they had screwed us pretty royally on that. And so we just filled a bag with feces, walked into the front to the manager who had told us to go fuck off, and just dumped feces across their keyboard and walked away. So have fun typing on that for the rest of the time you work there.
Oh, fantastic. What did they do? Did they just steal you?
They looked in shock. We asked if they remembered us from earlier, and the guy said, yes, I do. But he was very stern, like, yes, I do. What are you going to do about it? And then we just dumped the feces on the keyboard and walked out.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was a good vigilante justice moment.
Another thing that happened, this is less vigilante, more karma.
Mm-hmm.
And but I am conflicted about how it went down. Is I was at the gas station about 4 days ago, and there was a very attractive younger girl on her phone filling up her car, mm-hmm. which was, by the way, a Nissan Sentra.
Okay.
My wife drives one. And I realized there was a green nozzle protruding from her gas tank. She's filling a Nissan Sentra with diesel. Now, like I said, my wife has that car. I'm pretty sure they do not make Nissan Sentras in diesel.
Not in the U.S.
I'm not a car guy, but I at least before I wanted to say something, I Googled, do they make diesel Nissan Sentras? It was a resounding no from the internet. So I walk over to her. I gotta stop this from happening. She's essentially ruining her car.
Yep. Right now, there's only one thing you can do, which
is siphon it all out.
Drain the gas tank, yes.
Yeah.
You gotta drain the gas tank, and you gotta do it before you start the car.
Yes. So I went up to her, and she's on her phone. I said, and I'm kind of like waving, like, miss. And she kind of waves me off. It's clear, and she rolls her eyes. She clearly thinks that I'm trying to
flirt, hit on her.
Yeah, or something like that. And I'm like, no, miss, hey. And she like, lower. She goes, hold on. Hi, not interested, so bye.
Oh.
And I looked at her, and I looked at the diesel fuel nozzle, and I went, all right then. And I walked away, and then I Googled, how long does it take your car to break down once you try and now, here's the thing. At first, I felt so good, like, that was exactly what you deserve.
Right.
But at the same time, what has this girl gone through lifetime total that would put her in the position to think that every guy trying to interrupt her phone call is trying to hit on her? I bet that that's a reasonable assumption.
You know,
it's still pretty ego-driven, though. People come up to me and talk to me, and they're not hitting on me, so clearly you haven't factored in the outside circumstances.
Yeah, but I'm sure there has been times where, like, you've been on a phone call, and a guy has brazenly requested you end your phone call to talk to him. I'm sure that guy exists.
Sure.
I've seen that happen. I saw that happen to a friend of mine.
Yeah, but it's the assumption that that's what you would at least give the person the time of day.
I know, but she's about to do a really horrible thing and wreck. I don't know what her financial situation is.
Right.
I mean,
it may not even be her car.
Insurance won't cover you being a fucking moron. Right. I don't think insurance covers you filling your car with diesel and trying to drive it around. So I'm like, should I have tried harder? I mean, it's not unreasonable for women live in a very harassing society.
Yeah.
And, you know, as good as I felt when it initially happened, I'm like, I should have tried harder. Like, no, you need to listen to me. You're filling your car with a detrimental liquid.
I think a better move, if you were really feeling guilty, I think a move would be you fold up a piece of paper, you write in it, green handle equals diesel, and you kind of toss it into her window as you leave. And then if she chooses to look at it before she drives off, that's great for her. And if not, she'll find it at some point and be like, oh, that was
It's clearly diesel. I don't think she knows the difference between diesel and unleaded. I think she saw which one was cheaper and went, well, clearly I'm going with this one.
That is too bad, and that car will no longer be running. So
I kind of hoped to see it on the side of the road as I drove past, you know, so I could pull over and be like, do you need any help? And she could go, yes, thank you. I go, not interested, sorry, bye. That would have been the piece de resistance.
Yeah, but, except you would have gotten called. She would have frantically dialed 911 when she sees you just following her in the rearview mirror. This guy approached me at a gas station.
And he somehow sabotaged my car so it wouldn't run. I don't know how he did it.
The old ping pong ball in the gas tank. That's what he did.
I'm not familiar with that.
He put a ping pong ball in the gas tank, and ping pong balls obviously float, but then as the fuel pump, which is at the bottom, sucks things down, it sucks the ping pong ball in, ping pong ball gets caught in the fuel pump, and then the fuel pump stops working, the car runs out of gas, it stops on the side of the road, and then the ping pong ball floats back up to the top, so then when you're like, hey, my car won't start, you start it, and it works again, and then as you drive a little bit further, it'll stop again as it sucks back down.
I'm sure she knew that trick.
Uh-huh.
All right. So, Bobby, you got a new assignment here recently. You're working in the field. You're something of a professor.
Yeah, no, just an instructor, but I'm taking a bunch of students up.
Archaeology students.
Yeah, to go teach them how to do archaeology. And what's interesting is we have to get to the site. So it's about 45 minutes out east. And so we take them up there. And every morning, it's funny because there's...
Every morning you have to sneak up and bury a skeleton for them to find.
Ah, see if you can get it now. No, so we take them up there. And the way we do it, we have this carpool situation. And I've noticed a few interesting things, but one of them is I got assigned one student to drive up with me as a carpool. And this one student I met in the classroom when we're doing classroom instructions, there were two Japanese students and they were sitting right next to each other. And one of them was going to be mine, had a very Japanese name. And it was weird because he gets in the car in the morning. I say, hey, how are you doing? He gives very one word responses. And I don't mean Japanese like he doesn't speak English. He is born here, speaks English, everything. And we drive to the site. The entire drive, 45 minutes, silence, complete silence. And I ask him, hey, you want me to put on podcast? He goes, whatever. Hey, what have you been up to? What'd you do this weekend? Nothing much.
Okay.
45 minutes to there, and then, you know, we work through the field day, 45 minutes in the back, silent. It is a weird feeling to be sitting next to somebody in complete silence.
May I interject that as someone that's worked the road with sometimes strangers, comics that just got booked on the same thing that we decided to ride together, it's a very rude thing for you to not participate in the conversation.
Right.
I get not wanting to talk, but if you have a long ride and someone is obviously feeling awkward in the silence, don't get me wrong, Bobby, you and I have sat in a car for an hour without talking. We're close friends.
Yeah.
I do that with my wife all the time. Comfortable silence. If the silence is uncomfortable, will you please attempt to at least participate in the social contract?
And when somebody else is trying to by asking you questions, one-word responses don't really work.
Also rude. Yeah. Also rude. Continue.
And so I was like, man, this is so weird. But I was like, maybe this is just a cultural thing, you know, Japanese culture. It's just the way it is.
Racist. Continue.
Yes. Well, you're about to find out just how racist it was. So that went on for the week. And then on the last day, we were in the field and we were chatting. We had found an interesting projectile point and somebody said something in Spanish. And I just responded in Spanish just because that's what I was doing. And he responded back in perfect Spanish. And I grew up in San Diego. I can tell somebody who learned Spanish in high school and somebody who speaks Spanish. And he spoke Spanish. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. That's really fluent Spanish. And he's like, yeah, yeah, I speak Spanish. And I was like, but you don't just speak Spanish. That's perfect Spanish. And he's like, yeah, my parents are Mexican. I'm Mexican. And I was like,
the kid that you previously thought was Japanese?
Yes. And I was like, wait a second. Wait, really? Like, what? Your name? Your name? He's like, yeah, it's technically a Basque name, but the nurse misspelled it. And I was like, but I guess he was just sitting next to that guy. The other guy was Japanese. He was just sitting next to him. And then I realized, like, I'm putting two and
some
two.
Some of his Japanese spilled over on him.
Yeah. I'm putting two and two together. He has a kind of like a Japanese look, but now that I'm looking, I'm like, I guess you could be Mexican. And
he's wearing a sombrero and a poncho. Like, oh, yes.
I'm doing two and two in my head. I'm like, well, this guy's clearly spectrum-y. Like, he's very much on the autistic spectrum.
Okay.
Hence the silence and the one word answer.
So he's like the engineer. It's like, no, this roof is unsafe.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think to myself, oh, my God. Autistic Mexican equals Japanese. Like,
God!
When you do the racial math.
Oh my God, edit that out of this fucking episode right now.
When you do the racial math, like, he's silent, one-word responses, seems socially awkward, doesn't participate in the conversation. I just thought it was a cultural thing because he was Japanese. No, he's autistic Mexican, which apparently equals Japanese.
You're a monster.
That was an interesting one. The other one that I found, which made me feel like just an old man, just a super old man. Like, one was the kids were harassing. We have a grad student instructor up there, and they were harassing him. They're like, oh my God, I can't believe that. You're so old. And I walked up and like, what are they talking about? He's like, oh, I just told him I was turning 30 next week. And I was like, oh, you mother, I'm 34. Screw you guys.
Yeah.
But one gave me such an old man feeling, which is one of the girls halfway through the last day took her jacket off, and we're all working in the field, and is wearing a sheer top with no bra that is clinging, just completely clinging to her body.
You can see everything.
Not only can you see her nipples, which would be one thing, you can actually see the outline of her nipple rings.
What kind of archaeologist is this?
Yeah, a student archaeologist.
Big boobed archaeologist with nipple piercings running around out there?
Yeah, not big, but regardless,
boo.
I was like, one, you're 19.
Yeah.
I don't want to have this idea of you. Like, I don't want to be thinking of you as a sexual creature at all for any reason. So, like, you have to notice this. This can't be accidental. You're in a job where you're either looking at the ground all day or looking at something you're writing. Either way, you are looking right past your own chest. At some point, when you are like practically hanging your pen off your nipple rings through your shirt, are you going, maybe not appropriate? And I feel like being such an old man and being like, cover up, you hussy, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, let me play devil's advocate there. I don't think you always realize it. I don't think so. Mm. There's one scenario I may have talked about before, which is I was living with my ex-girlfriend in a townhouse in North Park at the time. And this place, in order to get the rent in on time and not receive one of their very staunch late fees, I had to drive my rent check to Mira Mesa every fucking month to get it in there. Because we only got paid the day before, you know, it was due. So anyways, and there was this bitch of a woman that worked the front office. She looked like an old turtle. She was just mean. It's one of those people where you cannot be nice enough where she won't return it with nastiness.
Right.
You ever feel that way? Like,
yeah.
Hey, Barbara, how was your day? Oh, just what do you want? You know, like, so anyways, I'm like, oh, I gotta talk to fucking Barbara. So I go to the office. I'm like, she's probably just gonna say something nasty. Just ignore it. And I walk in. I'm like, it's a Saturday. I'm like, here's a rent check. She's like, how are you? I'm like, good. And she's like, it's nice to see you. I'm like, weird. So I'm like, all right, bye, Barbara. I go back to my apartment to see my girlfriend. I'm like, you know that old nasty bitch, Barbara? She was actually nice to me. She was pleasant. All of a sudden, before I can finish my sentence, my girlfriend goes, I can see your dick in those pants.
What?
I'm wearing these workout pants and they're clinging to me and you can see the clear outline of my cash and prizes. And keep in mind, this is a very old, hard up old lady. He's like, yeah, I can see every curvature of your dick right now.
So you figured out, much like a lot of times young women feel like they have to kind of make themselves sexually presentable to their older male colleagues in order to be treated equally, you found out all it takes is showing off the goods to get Barbara's attention.
But my point is, I did not know that was going on, so I'm playing devil's advocate to your student. She may not have realized her nipples were as visible as they were.
Yeah, she definitely did. She had to look down over them every single second she looked down. But, okay. But that is interesting. And by the way, I'd like to interview Barbara. I'd like to see what... Yes.
I don't think she'd consent to anything with you.
I like the idea that Barbara has an insatiable hatred for everything in life except dick. Like, she's just sitting there like pissed, like, oh, my life is ruined, blah, 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 blah. But the second a half chub walks through, she's pretty excited.
Yep, probably dead. Anyway, let's call it a week. By the way, everyone, my show next week at Winston's in Ocean Beach has been moved. The promoter had the foresight to realize it was Comic-Con weekend here in San Diego, so we're not going to try and compete with that. So my show at Winston's has been moved to August 10th in Ocean Beach. Winston's August 10th, so hope to see you at that one. All right, let's call it a week. This is Ryan for Bobby and not Dave, I guess, saying see you next week, cruising with the Toad. Hi, not interested, so bye.
Ooh, yeah, time passing by. Ooh, yeah, time passing by. Motherfucking time is passing by.